Welcome back to another great episode of Comedians in Bed. And as always, I have another great guest here for you today. Seen the reels on IG and was like, yo, I'm laughing way too loud at work. Let me go to the bathroom and watch the rest of these because if not, they're going to let me go. So I had to reach out, bring her on the show. Everybody, please give it up for Imani Dene. Everybody.
What's up? Hey.
What's going on, man? How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. That's good. Just chilling. I went to Trader Joe's, got some groceries.
You go to Trader Joe's?
I did for today. And I, like, low-key for one person, it's pretty affordable. I spent like $55 and I got a good decent amount of food. I was like, wow.
Yeah, man, I love Trader Joe's, man. It's just not like around the corner from me, so that's why I don't go there often.
It's 20 minutes away from me, so.
I love Trader Joe's. They have like these cauliflower, like potato hash browns type things. Mm. So bussin', so good, so good. I love Trader Joe's, man. Are you like, are you a conscious like eater?
No, okay. Not at all. I just be eating.
No, I understand. I'm a vegetarian. I've been that for several years, so I try to be careful what I eat. Is there like a, I guess, a pregame meal you eat before you hit the stage or whatever?
No, like sometimes I don't eat, but sometimes I do eat before I go up. It's like, I don't know. This, I can't perform hungry is one thing. It's like I just absolutely cannot perform hungry. If I'm starving, then it's just going to be a weird set.
Yeah.
So I have to eat something. But most of the time, I guess French fries. bars have French fries.
So, okay, you're eating the bar's French fries. I was about to say, who got the best French fries?
The bar. I'm just kidding.
Wait, do y'all have a Rallies out there?
No. Or
Checkers?
What that is. What?
Checkers. Okay.
Those food places?
Yeah, it's like a fast food place. I didn't think it would be on the West Coast, but it's to me, they have like the best fries out of all the fast food restaurants. They're like, they look like they are baked in, like made in seasoned salt. Like they're not even golden. They're like kind of like reddish brown type deal.
Okay. Situation.
Fries. Okay. Fries. Do they get, you ever get fries for free? Cause they already know you about to order it.
There's a bar that is like pretty fancy and they already know that I'm going to order a salad. So they already get the shit prepared. They're like, you want cracked pepper on your Caesar salad? I'm like, yeah.
Not the cracked pepper. That's real fancy if you got the cracked pepper.
The Caesar salad is like $18. And so sometimes I've gotten it for free before. Other times I pay for it. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Is that how it is out there just in Portland? Because I ain't never... Have I paid for it? I paid for a salad. It's about $18. How is Portland? I've never been. First of all, I didn't even know. You're like the second black person I've ever met from Portland. So it'd be
we live out there. We out here. There's not a lot of us. I think the city of Portland's like what, 10% black, maybe less.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. My family's lived in Portland since like the 30s, so we're Oregonians.
Nah, that's what's up. How is the Portland scene out there? I would say please don't take offense to this. I kind of feel like scenes that are not like Austin, you know, LA, New York, Chicago are just kind of regular and I don't live there. So, you know, just you got mics, you got shows, stuff like that. How is the Portland scene out there?
Well, I don't want to talk it up too much because I want people moving here and disrupting such a great scene we have. But honestly, like I haven't been doing comedy that long. But when I entered the Portland comedy scene, it was right after the pandemic 2021. And it was super supportive because like, if you wanted to do comedy in 2021, you wanted to do comedy. We're still suffering from lockdowns periodically. And like people would have you do like stand up in mask and stuff. And like, it was just a tight knit community of people who like really, really wanted to do it. So much so that they ended up, like we have an Instagram page for our comedy scene and it has every single mic every single show that happens. And it even has like a website so you could read like blog posts from people in the scene who give advice. Oh, there's like therapist links. Shit is like, the scene is supportive in that sense. Like,
y'all got therapy links? That's what's who's taking the initiative to do this? Is this like a collaborative effort or is it just like one person? Well,
this comedian in the scene, it's my boyfriend. Brent Lowry. He created the page. Then he sent to another comedian, and Reese Hendricks is the one who has made it like very much about helping the scene in every aspect, whether it's like advice or therapy or like, I think we had someone who they were an improver, not a comic, but they like committed suicide. And so that, I think that like kind of influenced a lot of people to be like, okay, we need to start evaluating our mental health as comic.
How how do you make sure your mental health is right, or is your comedy like your mental health check for you?
I have a therapist, so I've had a therapist for some years now. And it's funny to me because I like a lot of comics don't have therapists or enter therapy while they've done comedy, and I had a therapist well before I ever got on stage, so I felt like I was kind of emotionally regulated to some extent before I got on stage. So I do talk about my like what I'm struggling with on stage. Like, I have a joke about lupus because I was diagnosed in March of this year, and like I have jokes about like being bipolar and like all the different mood swings. But I think that they come from a place where I've like already like released that negative energy. I think I do suffer just as much as everybody else. Like, I really do suffer with mental health, and I end up being a bit of a recluse and quiet and cold-ish to people. But I just like hope that people can be patient with me when I am dealing with shit, because like no one ever asks you like how you doing, and you lie and you're like, I'm doing good.
Yeah,
but nobody's really like poking at you to get like your true feelings out. So I just hope people have grace and patience with themselves and other people when they're behaving in a way that seems cold or careless.
No, I definitely understand, because I feel the same way, just with like my anxiety and my depression. Like, sometimes I don't really, well, not sometimes, a lot of times I don't talk to the comedians out here. I can kind of feel they might take it some type of way, but it's like, you don't even know, like, what's going on.
Like, y'all don't know what's up here.
Yeah, and it's like, and it kind of has made like networking kind of hard, just for a simple fact, because you do have to communicate to get booked on shows and stuff like that. Like, funny alone isn't just gonna, you know, do it. And I feel better when I'm out of the scene here, just because I feel more safer, just because of the people, and what, just how like more welcoming they are. I'm in Columbus.
Columbus, okay.
Yeah, Columbus, Ohio. And then I think about it too, like with bookers and stuff, and like, you know, you got to communicate with them and be friendly and be all, you know, somewhat, some say be all up in their face. And it's like, I can't do that.
Like, that's just not my style. Like, I didn't get growing up, I didn't get in people's faces. And I'm not like, I don't think I ever was like a huge attention seeker growing up. Like, I had a lot of friends who were definitely like loud out there, extroverted people. But I was very much like on the sidelines, and I watch and pay attention to things. And now as a comedian, I think people, like, they want you to use that attention you get in order to get like things. Yeah. And I don't do that, like, because it's new to me to have this kind of attention. Yeah. I'm still adjusting to it.
Do you feel like dealing with those mental health issues have hindered not necessarily your growth, but your growth as like as far as like opportunities, because you probably don't do it the way, quote unquote, it's supposed to be done in the game.
Yeah, I think that, like, sometimes I feel like a lot of people don't see me as happy or excited about, like, growth in comedy. And I was like, it's just because I'm suffering with some mental health shit on the side, so I don't, like, a lot of times people bring up my Instagram, and they're like, oh, your Instagram, and I'm like, bro, I'm broke. I have no fucking money. I was like, my rent, my car payment, my car insurance. Like,
yeah, no.
Food. Like, that's what I'm worried about. But people, like, it's hard to accept praise when you're going through a lot of shit. And at least for me, I know I'm putting that energy out there. I know that I'm putting out this energy that, like, I don't care about good stuff. When I do. And I'm very appreciative of all the good things that happen. But it is so hard to regulate the good stuff and the bad stuff, and not let the bad stuff show through your face or your interactions with other people. And I feel like that can sometimes limit my opportunities, because, like, when someone's like, hey, do you want to do this thing? And because I'm not in a good mood, I'm like, no. And then all of a sudden, like, they don't want to work with me because I've rejected them. I was like, well, yeah. I rejected you because I needed to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like sometimes, because I don't necessarily be as friendly with everybody, like, they just, like, they be like, you know, he's funny, but I feel like I'll get the sense, like, sometimes it get, like, a better than type of spirit, when it's like, it's really not. It's just that I've been in therapy, like, going on 10 years, so I can kind of tell who's safe and who's not. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather be around safe people. Like, you know, like, I'd rather be, and I'm learning how to be around, I'm learning how to coexist with people who are not necessarily safe, but at the same time, not give them the impression that I want to have a relationship with them. Like, just because I say hello, don't mean that I want to have a conversation. You know what I'm saying? Like, so yeah. I'm still trying to figure out how to be nice and welcoming, you know,
at the end of the day,
have my boundaries.
Everybody's like a coworker. We're, like, working this comedy job together, but we don't got to be close coworkers.
Yeah, like, everybody feel like we have to be friends just because we do comedy. It's like, that's not...
The Portland comedy scene there, I was like, we're friendly because we do it like that. We actually, like, get together and, like, throw parties and invite other comics to come, and it's definitely like a work party.
Yeah.
Not close.
Yeah.
It's weird to me, but it's
yeah, they throw parties here, and I've never been invited to one. But then I think about it too, like, That'd be my anxiety. I'd be like, dang, they don't fuck with me. But then I'd be like, I really didn't give them the opportunity to fuck with me. But then I'd be like, nigga, you 32. And these niggas is like in their 20s. I'm trying to be at the crib. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I really ain't missing out on nothing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I try to, I've gotten better at, like, working through it. Like, bringing my anxiety down and be like, this is what it really is, instead of, like, making a story in my head that it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can get delusional when it comes to your anxieties and depressions, or, like, everybody's looking at me and in a single person in that room looking at you.
Right. Like,
everything feels way bigger than it is. Sometimes I live in delusional land too. I be thinking I'm, like, the hot shit, and then get reality checked by an audience real quick.
No, I definitely understand, man. What is your, you know, your creative process for, like, joke writing? You have, in my opinion, you have pretty strong, like, misdirect from the clips that I've saw. Like, what is your creative process on how you come up with your material?
Someone asked me this yesterday, actually. They asked me when do I write? But I write at the bar, like, right before the open mic. I write, like, while I'm there. It's the only time that, like, I feel connected with the comedy is, like, when I'm literally around it. Like, I can't write at home. Like, I don't think I've ever written a single joke. Actually, that's a lie. The first joke I ever wrote, I wrote at home. But outside of that, I don't write at my house. Like, I write at the bar. I don't know why I get like influenced by it. And like, that's where all the good jokes come from. Hell, I'll even be Googling things because sometimes I use words I don't understand. And so I'm like, let me see. Like, I actually have a joke about Pokemon. I've never seen Pokemon a day in my entire fucking life. And I was like, all I know is that people trade them and they collect them. And so I was like, okay, well, white people, like, I'm going to trade and collect my white friends. And then my friend, I told them that joke or like my idea. And they're like, oh, well, they train Pokemon. You could be training your white friends. And I was like, oh, I didn't know about that. And like, you train them, they gain abilities, like all the stuff Googling, because my parents didn't let me watch Pokemon as a kid, so I don't know anything about Pokemon.
Yeah. I like when you said you write at the bar. I do that a lot too. That's another reason why I don't be talking, because I'll be just writing or just thinking of like shows to do or just working on like podcast shit. Like, I get real creative. I think it's because like you're in the atmosphere, if that kind of makes sense. I think
it's because it's the atmosphere where comedy exists for me, for us.
Yeah.
At the bar, so that's where I tend to write. But honestly, at first it was out of convenience. Like, I worked a 9-to-5, and then immediately after work, I'm taking the bus, public transit, to a mic in my work clothes. Like, I didn't even change. And so, like, on the bus, I would try to write, but the bus is moving. So when I get to the bar, the first thing I do is just fucking scribble as much as I can before my set. And like, at first it was just literally out of pure convenience. And then it just became like a habit. Like, I don't write anything at home.
Mm-hmm. I write everywhere, man. I work, toilet, barbershop, home,
club. I think I used to tweet. I used to be on Twitter a lot and I would tweet things I thought were. But
yeah, I do that too. I try not to do it on Facebook because I do have a like a job, and I don't want them to like, you know, look it up and get me fired. But I don't really be caring all that much. Okay, cool. And are you writing like every day or just when you feel inspired at the mics?
Like every single time I'm at a mic. I don't go to mics every single day. Not anymore anyway. I used to. I think I did like 50 sets 1 month, and I was like, this is ridiculous. This is like, why would I do that? Like,
do you guys have mics every night?
Yes, you have a mic every single day.
So right now, how many are you going to? Hold on, time out, my fault. Bruh, I live in the hood, and there's these cops that just put up, and you ever seen somebody with like dinosaur arms? Like real short arms that kind of don't.
No,
like they have like really really short arms, like it kind of like it don't match their body, like
disability.
No, like you know how like basketball players have like a long wingspan.
Yeah,
it kind of like matches their body, but then like somebody has like not as much of a wingspan, and it just doesn't look like it fit. My fault. It just threw me off. My fault. I had to talk about it. All right. Okay. So right now, how many mics are you hitting, and why did you dial back?
I think that like I probably go to maybe 4 a week when I could probably go to 12 a week if I went to every single one of them. But I think I dialed back just because this year getting diagnosed with lupus, I was just like, I got so depressed about life. And then I got in a car accident and I was just like, well, my life is fucking over. I was like, now I don't have money and I'm sick. So this shit made me so irritated to the point where like, I'm from Portland and a lot of other comics are not from here. So I have family and I have friends who don't do this shit at all. So I was just kicking it with them. And I found like hanging out with them, I'd hear funny shit and I'd just bring it back to the mic. But I think that's part of the reason is like, I have friends here, so I don't have to do comedy to be entertained or to be around people. I could be around my homies. And I think my friends, like, I think, I don't know if you know who Kyle Kinane is, but he's a comedian. I think he worked for Comedy Central for a while. Oh, she's really going down over there.
It's going down. My fault. I'm listening to you though, but they leave. It's like that every day over here, man. It's bad.
I live in the white hood. It's all. It's honestly, it's just homeless people.
Yeah.
They on the fentanyl.
Yeah, man. I don't know who they looking for. I think they looking for some little Mexican kid over here. He'd be bad as hell, but yeah, I don't know. Okay, so wait. One thing that stuck out with me, you said y'all got like how many mics a week do y'all got in Portland? Because I'm not thinking like Portland being this big scene, like
I can confirm 100% with you how many mics there are just by going on Instagram because of that account I was telling you about.
Yeah,
so if you're ever in Portland, if you're looking for shows, Last PDX Instagram account, that is where you would go hit up Reese. He'd probably tell you where everything is. Let's see. It's loading, but it's here. Okay, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh, and 11. So I lied. 11 mics.
11.
One of them is leaving. And then there's some mics that aren't weekly. They're like once a month.
I was about to count, but I don't even feel like, because we got a lot of those too. And yeah, no. We probably got around that. We definitely got around the same.
You have it every single day?
No. At some point last year, I was. But then those mics started to fizzle out. And then we went through like a weird transition where like even after COVID was like done, like mics started to go down. And then new mics started to pop up. So you had to fill those out first. So at back like last year, I was going like every day like every day or 6 days out the week. And then right now I go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I just started going Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Monday I hit one mic, Tuesday I hit one mic, and Wednesday I hit two mics. The Friday mic is good here, but football is real big here, so like high school football, like the audience out there in that area, like nobody's coming out, so I just don't even, I'll go out if I like want to work on some stuff, but like yeah, I try to go like four or five times out the week just to get some reps in. And like, so what I do, certain mics, like on Monday mics, it's a pretty good crowd, so I'll try to do like all new jokes, and then Tuesday I'll try to do like crowd work or like jokes that I've had for a while that I want to, you know, work on new tags or whatever, or just like not as new but kind of like semi new and I'm trying to memorize. And then Wednesday it's at a independent comedy club up here, so I'm just trying to do like all jokes I can remember. I'm just trying to get some reps in with jokes that I need. And then the one after that, I'm just doing like crowd work because don't nobody be listening.
You guys are lucky, it sounds like, because you have clubs, right?
We got two. One of them, okay, so the one club we have is Funny Bone. It's like the corporate Funny Bone. That one is pretty hard to get into. Then we got a newer club that's an independent club, and it's not as hard to get into. But in my opinion, they kind of use the same people that they use at the Funny Bone. So it is, but it's not as hard. That makes sense.
Yeah, we only have one club here, so everything else happens at bars. It's hard to get like stage time at the club outside of like they have Portland's Funniest Person competition. Mm-hmm. And so like I initially wasn't going to sign up this year. I ended up signing or getting in. I did not sign up. But people like me and they were like, Imani, you better do this contest. And so they put me in. But that's the only time you get stage time in the summer at the club, period. Like there's no open mics during this time of the contest. It's filmed, it's recorded sets. So everybody signs up because they want their tape, which is like $25 tape that you get for your set. Some of these people, like I didn't buy my set. I was like, this set was trash. I got heckled during my competition set and I was so mad. I yelled at this woman. I was like, I don't want this set. I don't want it. Makes me look bad. Makes her look crazy. It was just ruined. But that's the only time you get stage time and recorded stage time is, I mean, if you want professionally recorded. So a lot of my sets that people see on Instagram are nicely recorded, which I think is part of the reason why on Instagram is because of how the quality of the video.
We just started getting stage time at the Funny Bone last year. They did a monthly showcase. It was a bringer show. But now they stopped it after they had the funniest person contest here a couple months ago. And so now they just do an open mic. And you have to pay for it, which I don't mind. But, like, it's the only mic in Ohio that I'm aware of that you have to pay for. So, for me, it's, like, that's up north where, like, my job is at. And, like, there's mics down the street that's free. So, I'd rather just...
Do the free stuff.
Yeah, and then you're not even in the main room, which is fine by me. It's not a big deal. You're not even in the main room. So for me, I would say it would be a step back because I've got so used to being in the main room. It wouldn't be a step back, but I just would rather continue being in main room so I can get used to it because I don't think I'm still used to it. And then the attic here, it's easier to get into. It's definitely easier to get into. And you could just go up to the owner and be like, hey, I want to throw a show. From what I heard, he'll be like, okay, cool. Like, you know, what's your idea or whatever. But yeah, that one's easier to get into, but it's still newer. So it's still trying to like figure out the ropes and everything. But that one's getting a lot more buzz because, I mean, they've been booking Dave Chappelle quite frequently here the last couple weeks. So shout out to them. Yeah. But one thing you did mention that I do want to talk to you about, you were saying your reels and how they look, you know, professional and everything like that. So that's why I was going to ask, because one thing I realized about your reels, you really don't use a lot of hashtags. And I've been told the opposite, that you need to use more hashtags to get your views up, but you really don't use that much. And I think the highest you got was like a 1.3 million views. So like, what's your like method for like getting your reels out there? Or do you just kind of go with the flow?
So at first I was just like going with the flow, and then I feel like I got lucky. And it wasn't even on like the Imani Dene Instagram. It was like my other Instagram account, which is where I first posted one of my jokes, and I had three hashtags, and then next thing you know, 95,000 likes. I was like, okay, well, maybe you don't need to put a lot of hashtags. I think that the most important thing is to make sure you rep your city. Hashtag the fuck out of it. Portland doesn't have that big of a comedy scene, so if people look up Portland comedy, they see me, because I have made sure that my face is the Portland comedy hashtag. You probably will see my face a bunch of times if you type in hashtag Portland comedy, because I use it. There's barely any Portland comics, so that helps. I rep Portland, Oregon in the hashtags. I only post jokes in the morning, like at the crack of dawn, because that's when people are on their phone scrolling. At least that's when I'm on my phone scrolling the most, is like right when I wake up in the morning. So I only ever post in the morning. What else? Yeah, the quality of the videos is important. We are lucky we have three people in the scene who, they don't do comedy. They are obsessed with filming it. They love comedy. And so they come and film stuff, and you just pay them and get your tape from them. And so I got lucky in the sense that, like, when I knew somebody was filming me, I performed to my best ability. So I had a tape that's worth it, because I'm not stupid. Some people will buy every single tape that they get recorded of themselves. And I'm like, that's just $25. I'm not rich. I'm sorry. It doesn't sound like crazy amount to some people, but like, I work a regular job at a UPS store. I don't have all the money in the world to be paying $25, $30 for a tape. So I just spend my little amount of money and get whatever I think is going to be the best quality. Or like, obviously, I mean, I record my sets on my phone, so I know if it's worth it just from listening to the tape. But yeah, those things, I always cut the joke not the punchline, at the setup. So I could post the set or the punchline second. I want both of them to be funny, if that makes sense. Like, you could end up posting a reel that's way too long. When you post a joke on your story, the first 15 seconds is what people see. So anytime someone shares your joke, you got to be funny in the first 15 seconds, because if they share it on their story, everyone's only going to see the first 15 seconds, unless they decide, oh, I want to click on this and watch the rest of it. So it's things that you like, you notice over time. But when I first started posting, I didn't pay attention to any of that shit. I just kind of got lucky. And then when I realized like, oh, I want to keep this up, that's when I was like, okay, well, I gotta slow this down, cut this up more. Don't be afraid to cut out laughs, which is, some people are like, what the hell? But I'm like, no, sometimes your laughter, it lasts too damn long. So you gotta cut it so that it works better in a reel. But
what what opportunities have come from you know, being successful with your reels?
Some cool stuff, like Brittany Schmidt, she's a comedian in LA. She has like a Don't Tell clip and a HBO special thing. She like DM'd me and asked me to feature for her at Helium, which I was like, I've never even hosted at Helium, let alone featured, which was really cool. So that happened. I've been like DM'd by some of my favorite comedians and just chatted with them. Some of my favorite people have reached out or followed me on Instagram, and it just is cool in that respect. Nothing super cool has happened. Like tomorrow, Cat Williams is performing at the Moda Center, which is like a 12,000 seat venue. And I DM'd him. Well, he DM'd me first and was like, you're doing great. It's very funny. And I was like, hey, I heard you're coming to Portland. I have a show, but you know, I would quit. I would cancel it if you said I could feature for you. And he has not responded at all. So,
what does it feel like to have these people like sliding your DMs?
It feels cool. It's like exciting. I never really put anybody at a different like pedestal than I am in my entire life. I just never felt like, I think I did at one point, but then I got extremely disappointed. Like when they say, don't meet your heroes. Like I met somebody who I was a huge fan of and they disappointed me and they were actually very mean to me. And so I was like, oh, well, nobody is better than me. Like I don't deserve to be treated poorly by anyone, no matter what status or whatever. And so like, I have soon realized like as more and more comedians like reach out to me or talk to me, that they're just my peers. They do this the same way I do this. Like I'm fascinated by how talented they are. Like Greer Barnes, he'll comment on some of my reels and I'm like, you were on the Chappelle show. Like you like work at the Comedy Store. You like, you're amazing. And it's just like a nice thing to have him like comment multiple times on multiple videos. Or Morgan Murphy was one of the writers, or is one of the writers for Abbott Elementary, and I've met her and she's so supportive of my comedy, and it's like, it's a blessing. But I also realized from at least meeting her, I'm like, you're just regular people. Like,
yeah.
And that's why I just got to give everybody like regular praise and grace. It's nice. It's really nice. And I do find it's so fascinating to like think that people see me like just like as I'm just as great as them or something like that. At least that's what it feels like. Like I'm definitely no Greer Barnes, but like for him to think that I'm funny is cool. For Cat Williams to think that I'm funny is cool. For like just any person who thinks I'm funny is really cool. But for those people, I'm like, I look up to you and you like my shit. I'm trying to get Miss Pat to notice me, but it's still
cool. Why specifically Miss Pat?
Miss Pat is my favorite. She is very much my favorite. Like, I discovered her right when I decided to start doing comedy. I watched like The Degenerates on Netflix and I saw her set and it was just so funny to me. And weirdly enough, like, I don't think we live similar lives, but we feel like we lived similar trauma. Like so a lot of very similar traumatic things have happened. And so I'm like, I relate to her and I wish I could be a storyteller in the same way she's a storyteller. I don't have the same type of comedy style as her, even in a little bit, but I still admire it so much. Plus I want her to be my mom, so.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I definitely understand. I feel like y'all two would have a very, very funny, interesting conversation.
I hope so. I feel like she would treat me like my mom treats me, which just a little bit nicer because she's not related to me.
That is what's up, man. I would definitely, if I was you, I would definitely make merch that'd be like Cat Williams DM me.
His DM was so sweet. It was the sweetest thing ever. I was like, oh, how supportive. He used one of those like, they're not like a Bitmoji, but you know, like emojis have like that shark face that you could do, or like he used an owl face and it was just like, I was like, that is the corniest thing ever. Who knew Cat Williams would do something that corny? But I took a screenshot and I'm going to keep it forever because I was like, that was just the coolest experience to have Cat Williams validate my comedy.
I feel like that's another part of it. Like, we kind of see him like on TV, but then like when we do have these interactions, you know, when they do become our peers, it's kind of like, oh, this, you're actually kind of this way or whatever. You know, that's kind of dope as well. Makes you more intrigued and more interesting and interested in them.
Yeah, because there has been a lot of people who, like, I didn't know. Like, I feel so bad when people bring up comedians to me, and I'm like, I don't know who the fuck that is. Like, I really don't have a single clue.
I don't be feeling bad.
I feel bad because, like, sometimes, because, like, I only started comedy in 2021, and so, like, I think a lot of times people, and I was a stalker in 2019. By stalker, I mean, like, in 2019, I started showing up at open mics. And I would just watch everybody in my scene all the time. Like, I would be there every week at one open mic that happened twice a week. I would just sit there and I would sit in the front and I would just watch them. And it was like entertaining to me. And I felt like I got to know the comedians before I actually was a part of the scene. Mm-hmm. And then I finally tried comedy and some people remembered me and some people didn't. I was like, but I've seen you before and I remember this joke and people will be surprised that I could quote them word for a joke that they haven't said for 2 years. And I'm like, well, it's because I was there.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I admired the skill of the Portland comics. I even used to watch them on YouTube. I would literally type in Portland comedy on YouTube and watch before I ever entered the comedy scene because I'm not somebody who wants to go unprepared into something. Like, I think anybody who is just like, I've never done this before, and just goes up on stage and has no jokes and they just ramble, unless that's your comedy style and you just like are gonna figure out a way to master just not having material, then go for it. But for me, I have to be prepared. It's embarrassing for me not to be prepared. It's not embarrassing for people, but I had to make sure I knew what the hell I was doing before I ever did comedy.
Yeah, I usually go into things with a full-fledged plan. Like, I don't do well on just, it's like I will people, just wing it.
People who do contests and it's their first time ever doing comedy at a contest, I'm like, you're both. You got more than I do because I really couldn't. I would not do that.
But we love those type of people because they make it easier for us to advance. Like, it's the first time? Oh, you're going to kill, man. You're going to kill.
Oh, those people end up being the bringers, though. Like, I brought the whole office with me.
Oh, man. Heck yeah, man. Monty, who's on your Mount Rushmore for comedy?
Didn't I just say I don't know comedians like that?
Like, worldwide? All you know is Miss Pat?
No, I really like Bernie Mac. He's one of my favorites. I say Miss Pat is up there for sure. Controversial, but I like Louis C.K. I know some people will be like, what? But there's something about his jokes that I'm like fast. Like, it's just smart. And I'm not going to, you can hate on him all you want. He writes some smart jokes. I also think Chris Rock is really funny. I like how he talks about race. I think he's very clever in his race conversations. How many people is that? Is that four?
Yeah. The Louis C.K. one I like because I haven't watched him in a while, but not because of that, but well, I probably shouldn't say that out loud, but I had what I'll
say Bill Burr as my last one because I like Bill Burr.
Yeah. I was listening to Andrew Santino's Whiskey Ginger podcast today, and he had Nikki Glaser on there, and they were talking about Louis C.K. and they were like, well, he kind of already told on himself years ago, I guess, because he had a joke about how his grandpa took him somewhere. Oh, how his grandpa told him all the cuss words. And then he went to school and he said all the cuss words and he got like excited by like her shock because she was shocked by the cuss words and she didn't know what to do. And then she started to cry or whatever. And so they were like, oh, you did this. Like, this is just who you are. You just get that initial shock factor or whatever. But they were just talking about like how they giving him his props and his praise and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, I feel like do whatever you want, talk about it. Whoever rock with it, I guess whoever don't.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's extended a day, so
Imani, what words before I go for that one, there was a question I had popped in my head. Since you are young in the game, but you are getting so much validation from people who have years in the game, do you ever find yourself like dealing with like imposter syndrome?
Oh, hell yes. Like, all the time. Like, comics will ask the question, how much time do you have? And also, if you're a comic and you don't know the answer to this question for you, for real, know the answer? Don't make up an answer if you don't really know the answer. Like, it's rough because people will think that, like, I don't know, I don't think I have as much time as people think I do. Because, yeah, I know how to write a joke, but putting that together, you don't see me putting a whole 10-minute set on Instagram because the whole 10 minutes wasn't great. There was just some, like, beautiful moments in there. That's something that, like, I have to, like, that causes me to feel like I'm less than is because I'm like, I don't think that this is as good as everybody else is making it out to be. Or I'm afraid of the expectations that come with success. And like one thing that I've always been fearful of and probably something I don't need to be fearful of is like how fast I grow in this, like how fast I've been reaching like recognitions. I've had like management teams reach out to me and stuff just because of Instagram. And I'm like, no. I think that I need to have, when I probably don't need to have this, but I feel like I need to have like the comedy experience in the sense that you start up as an open micer, then you get booked on some shows, then you become a host, then you become a feature, then you become a headliner. That's the road everybody tells me that you take as a comedy, like as a comedian. And I have this feeling that like I'm going to skip steps and I don't want to skip steps and like, people are like, that's fine to skip steps, but I'm like, I don't believe that I'm worth the step being skipped. And it really just like makes me feel bad about stuff, my life. I don't know. Yeah. I start to kind of like not great.
I kind of hear you, like what I'm hearing you saying is like you don't want to skip those steps to miss the experience.
Yeah, I miss the experience, but I also feel like the greats have gone through all those steps. What makes me better than them to skip something? Like,
yeah, I hear what you're saying. Lately, I've been like praying about like for like God to like break protocol. I just feel like after COVID, I don't know what comedy was before COVID, but I feel like after COVID, like, you doing shows at like on top of roofs and stuff and like in a garage and it's just changing. And I kind of see how older comics are kind of like stuck in how it used to be.
Yeah.
And at the same time, they complain about how it is with like pay with comedy clubs or how it used to be. And it's like, let's shake it up. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's nothing wrong with that. And one thing that dropped in my spirit when you was talking, like, if you really think about it, like football games, right? Like like say Patrick Mahomes, like say he throw 40 passes, he don't complete all 40 passes. You know, there's some bad moments in there, but there's also some good moments in there too. So like when I'm on stage, like when I every line, I'm like analyzing it. All right, that one didn't hit, that one didn't hit, this one did. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like, for me, it's kind of like baseball. Like, okay, I striked out, bam, got a first base strike. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of what I think about it. Like, and like, if you really think about it, man, you sat down and like studied it for a year. So you like, yeah, like you studied it for, you know what I'm saying? Like a year. It ain't like you just popped up and then bam, like you studied the craft and you took the time to, you know, invest yourself. And then after that, you went up, you started to do your thing, and these are the results of what you studied. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I always like to tell like the other Portland comics, like the people who I think are like the big heads in Portland comedy, I'm just like, well, I learned from you guys. Like, that's who, you guys were the people I was watching in order to learn comedy. And I also feel like I've had to ask people, I'm like, who should I know in like the comedy world that I don't already know? And so people literally sent me a list on they have the Portland comics board. You probably have something similar, like a Facebook board for all the comedians. And like people like commented on my post about like, who should I know? And they like flooded me with comedy specials that I didn't watch, not a single fucking one. But I will say that I did do that. I will watch them at some point.
Oh man, Imani, what words of encouragement or advice would you give to any comedian that's listening to this right now?
I would say go and watch a local show, like go to open mics. You don't have to perform every single time you enter a room. Know your limits. Know yourself. Find your voice. Oh, and number one thing, slow down. Don't talk through your jokes. I think that was like the best advice I ever got. And then the second piece of advice I got that was really good is comedians are sensitive. They are very sensitive. And there's nothing wrong with being sensitive, but they're sensitive. So you might piss off another comedian because you said something, and you might piss off an audience member, and how people will piss you off. But we're sensitive people. So bing, give yourself bong. A break. Yeah. Bing bong. Give yourself. Yeah.
Imani, tell people why they should listen to Comedians in Bed.
Because it's informational, and you'll learn something, and there's not a lot of times where you get to learn insight from people who are in scenes that you're not in. So I think it's useful information.
Yeah. Message.
Can I say more?
Tell people where they can find you at.
You can find me on Instagram at Imani Dene _. Yeah, that's really the only place I really exist. You find me on YouTube at Imani Dene _, I think. I don't know what my YouTube is, but if you type in my name, you'll find my YouTube. Yeah.
That's what's up, man. If you want to catch next week's episode, we go live 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time or 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time every Tuesday on my YouTube channel at TYE Comedy. Once again, that's TYE Comedy. But if you want to see funny stuff throughout the week, you can follow us on IG at Comedians in Bed Podcast. Imani, man, doing her thing out there. Make sure you guys hit her up and follow her on everything social. We appreciate you for joining us this week. Imani, we'll see you guys next week.